Chapter 20. The longest journey begins with a single step. The last person I talked to on Mars was my good old mentor, Oz, who said he was not quite 64 years old now. That's in Martian years, though, which comes to about 120 on Earth. He didn't look a day over 100, though. Wizened and wrinkled, but still with a wry, intelligent look and a sparkle in his eye. We were in the Space Communications Room at Armstrong Space Force Base, where we'd landed from orbit. It was a bright, clean room that felt old. Too many coats of paint. Paul exchanged pleasantries with Oz, then left after the 12-minute lag. "How bad is it, Oz? Can the colony survive without support from Earth?" Following the same protocol as we'd used 50 years before, Oz's image froze on the screen when he hit the send button. I'd brought the Washington Post to read while the signals crawled back and forth. The only story about us was on page 14, and it wasn't complimentary. Oz came back, smiling. "We're completely self-sufficient, Carmen. Have been for more than 20 years. Human population over 3,000, a third of them native-born. Our living and farming space is probably 20 times what it was when you left. The big debate over here is whether we should stay out of space, whether the others meant to include us in their warning. There were no Martian ships in the fleet. A majority says, stay home. We have a space elevator, and they didn't blow it down, but its only real function was as a terminal for the shuttle to and from Earth. Personally, I think that Earth can go to hell in its own way. My big regret is that now you and Paul can't come home. You could have a natural baby or two now. They solved the lung problem and recycled the mother machine for scrap. And you're still young enough. In-fucking-credible. Look, I have to go off to the old folks' dinner. Can you call me again tomorrow?" He looked off-screen. "About 1600 your time?" "Definitely at 1600," I said. "If you have new art, bring some to show me." It wasn't going to happen. I heard Paul in the next room, one loud bad word. Went through the door and found him staring at a flat-screen monitor. "Shit," he said. "Would you look at this?" It was a picture of a human newsie, male and handsome, standing in front of a familiar background. Here. The Armstrong Space Force Base. "We on the news?" "Not really." He picked up the chaser and ran it back a minute or two. There was an obviously simulated picture of a lander like ours taking off tail first, the way they did spaceflight before the elevator. "Back to old-fashioned ways," Anuzi said. "Our space force is sending a rocket up into the cloud of rocks that now surrounds our planet to get some close-up observations and perhaps work its way through, blasting the little obstacles with the powerful laser in its nose and maneuvering around the larger ones. The Space Force confirms that they don't believe this first try will actually penetrate the millions of miles of debris, but it will be a good start, and no human pilot will be endangered. All the flight controlled by virtual reality interfacing. Rumor has it that the VR pilot will be none other than Paul Crash Collins, back on Earth, still young through the magic of general relativity. Rumor has its head up its ass," Paul said. "Nobody said anything to me." "Could you do it?" "Would you?" "No. And no way in hell. I never trained for that kind of launch off Earth, only from Mars, where it's a lot simpler. But more, it's thumbing our nose at the others. Are they insane?" "Maybe they all are," I thought. "The culture. Maybe they have a more complicated plan. Looks like propaganda, doesn't it?" He calmed down a little. "Might be. Shoot up an empty rocket that they know won't make it through, just to show that they're doing something. But I won't be in on it with them." "Best we all stay out of it. Those crowds in Washington." I leaned on a bookshelf and looked out the window at the dry brown hills. "Let's get away, Paul. Just disappear from the public eye for a while. We have plenty of money." He nodded. The government would be glad to see us go. Let's talk it over with everybody tonight. Have to arrange for Snowbird to get to that Siberia place safely. The swim first. That's important to her. We talked it over with the Space Force press people and came up with a workable plan. There was a beach to the north of the base, closed to the public, which would afford a good view of the launch. Snowbird could get her swim, and they would get publicity shots of us watching the launch, with Paul regrettably declining the VR's pilot seat, too tired and out of practice. Then we could fade out of sight, to the relief of all concerned. Namir and Elsa and Dustin wanted to go back to New York City. That didn't sound smart to me. Elsa thought with hair dye and a dab of makeup, they'd regain their former anonymity, lost in the crowd. I thought Namir was too handsome for that, and Dustin too weird-looking, his hair in spikes, but I kept it to myself. We had a last family dinner in the mess hall, Namir ecstatic at having actual steaks to grill, real potatoes and fresh asparagus, bottles of good California wine. I didn't sleep well, and neither did Paul. Crazy days. Just at dawn, we all piled into Space Force vans and went down a bumpy gravel road to the beach. There was a hard beauty in the dusty, persistent plants. The ocean, a churning, eternal miracle. Snowbird was awestruck, speechless. Paul and I rolled up our pant legs and waded into the frigid surf with her, hand in hand. "So warm," she said. "Feel the sand." We gave her a line to hold, just a clothesline that was in the back of the van, and she floated out past the breakers for a few minutes, Space Force divers watching her anxiously. They didn't want to preside over the first Martian to die of drowning. She might have enjoyed the irony. The time for the launch approached. The camera crew had written our names in the sand, Dustin remarked on the metaphor, where we were supposed to stand. We took our positions and watched the countdown on the off-camera monitor. I had visions of the old 20th-century launches, a roaring fury of fire and smoke. But they didn't have free power. In our case, it was kind of a hiss and a screech, a nuclear-powered steam engine, a blue-white star sizzling in its tail. It rose slowly. At first, it looked like Ad Astra, but of course it was one of the replicas they'd use for practice. The nose had some white stuff painted thickly on, which Paul called an ablative layer. I had to think of the thick white sunscreen he'd been wearing the day we met in the Galapagos, the day before I left Earth. It was pretty high when the light in its tail went out. The monitor went out, too, then flickered back on as the sound of the rocket stopped abruptly. Spy again on the monitor, shaking its head. "You don't listen, do you?" The rocket started falling in a tailspin, then rolled to point down. "I suppose we have to be less subtle." The rocket nosed into the ocean, about a mile away, raising a high white spume. "All this energy that you call free comes to you at the expense of a donor world in a nearby universe. You are donors now." The monitor went dead. A tracking airplane pancaked into the sea and sank. Another plummeted to crash on the beach to the south. The camera crew were shouting into their phones. A jet plane that had been high screamed to its death in the sea. I went to my purse. The phone was blank. Namir slid into the driver's seat of a van and punched the start button over and over. Snowbird stopped toweling herself and looked in some direction. "So, this is the end," she said, as if you had asked her for the time. "Idiots," Paul said. "Surprise," Dustin said. Even Elsa was almost speechless. "So what do we do now?" For some reason, they looked at me. I was standing at the gate. I tried it, and it swung open, its electronic lock dead. I think we better start walking.
The End. You've been listening to Starbound by Joe Haldeman, narrated by Annie Hank as the voice of Carmen Dula, George Guidel as Namir Zahari, and Jefferson Mays as Fly in Amber. This book was directed by Abigail McHugh. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.